Hello, welcome to Sailing Uncovered, episode 11, a special preview to the Round the Island race that takes place every year off the south coast of Britain. We will hear from Bob Fisher, who's hardly missed a race since about 1861. Just joking, Bob. And we'll investigate a certain Middle Eastern connection to the race as well. First, though, what do we think about the America's Cup? Stunning images from Bermuda, some really edge-of-the-seat racing, and even the sceptics have to admit that it's been exciting. And as I am, in fact, in Bermuda, just had to drop that in, I can tell you that the race village also genuinely does have a real buzz about it. In fact, the whole island has. A few days ago was Ladies' Day at the race village, and it was fantastic. Unfortunately, it was a day that was lost because of light winds, so we didn't actually have any racing. But nonetheless, they really did put on a great show. There were singers, there was dancing, carnival atmosphere, some amazingly dressed ladies. They really put on a great show. Stunning hats, stunning shoes, matching handbags. Didn't see a lot of Louis Vuitton handbags, but the America's Cup trophy did arrive in its Louis Vuitton case. So it really was a spectacular day. They put a real, a lot of effort into it. It was fantastic. So as I'm here, I hear you ask, why isn't he doing an America's Cup special? Well, patience. It's exactly what I'll be doing in a few days' time. So subscribe to the podcast and it'll automatically download onto whatever it is you're listening to us on as soon as it's out. So that way you don't lose, you don't miss a thing. So to the Round the Island race, and few know more about it than Peter Stewart Hunt, who's part of the race management team. So Peter, for those who don't know, tell us, what is the Round the Island race? What island is it? Tell us more.
Well, I mean, for some, it's just a great day's fun out on the water going round a very beautiful coastline of the Isle of Wight. And for others, it's a very highly competitive event that takes place once a year. It appeals to sailors of all ages, from teenagers to octogenarians. And we have had a 90-year-old actually complete the course and on the helm. Men and women, all abilities. It really is a race for all. It's a race for everybody. So
give us a sense of the flavour of the race, because it is becoming much more international as well. So what is the point of turning up and sailing around the Isle of Wight, and how long does it take?
It's very much on a sailor's bucket list. I mean, it doesn't matter at what level you race, which is one of the, I think, the appeals for an international audience, because there are classic boats like J-class Velsheda's done it, as well as state-of-the-art record-breaking greyhounds like Fado and Concise and, you know, the big trimarans. And I think what we do is, obviously, we're now bringing the race to a much, much wider audience because of technology and the internet and tracking facility that we have as well. So you can follow the boats as they go round the island. It's a 50-mile westabout course that starts and finishes in Cowes. It only has one rounding mark on the other side of the island from Cowes. And it is absolutely unique, but it's also a top-quality sporting event. I mean, it involves a huge number of people managing the race on the day, but it takes us a year, basically, to put the race together, line up fantastic volunteers. There's about 200 volunteers out on the race course on the day itself. This is a lot of effort for a one-day race.
You mentioned
worth
the
it.
The top end of the sailing spectrum and the fact that it is a serious race. And there have been quite a few records set in recent years, the multi-hull record, the mono-hull record.
And they're all getting a bit balmy now. They're kind of coming home for breakfast. And we're almost not ready for them. For example, Mike Slade, on his fantastic 100-foot far called Leopard, he currently has the mono-hull record, which he set back in 2013, and it's yet to be broken. And that was 3 hours, 43 minutes and 50 seconds, which is just phenomenal. When you think it's a 50-mile round island course, it is just extraordinary. And then in 2016, last year, we had the giant Mod 70 trimaran Fado that's become a very familiar name in international waters. And that tore around the course in 2 hours, 23 minutes and 23 seconds, and that actually smashed the multi-hull race record that Sir Ben Ainslie had set in 2013 by 28 minutes. I mean, it is just extraordinary.
Amusing, the Team Fado boys are the holders of the current record simply because regular listeners to Sailing Uncovered will know that we've been trying to get them on the show for I don't know how many episodes, but they're never in one place for more than about 30 seconds.
Exactly. Yes, they never hardly ever step ashore.
And when they do, it's usually some far-flung place that you can't connect with them. So one day.
Yes.
From a sailing point of view, what are the challenges in the Round the Island race?
Weather, the numbers of people that you're sailing against. It is a crowded race course, unless you're right out in front or you're right at the back. You've got a few hours out there. Depending on what the wind's doing, you can end up sort of bottlenecking up round the back of the island. Bembridge Buoy. It has happened where we've had a huge parking lot out there at the back of the island midday as everybody starts to move in and they're not moving off again. It can happen. And that's the excitement, actually. There's massive challenges. People think it's a sort of easy day out cruising around the island. It's not. It can be quite tough. And we've had some rough years. We've had some windless years. You have to be back by 10 o'clock at night in order to actually score a result. It's quite tough when the wind isn't blowing.
Some of those boats will be starting before dawn.
Yes, the first start actually this year, I'm afraid it's terribly early. It's 5:30 in the morning.
How do you decide who has to go at that time and who doesn't?
Basically, the fast boats go first. They get them out of the way because otherwise you get this just massive fleet collecting on the start line at the squadron. They use the cannons at the squadron to start the racing, and there are 11 different starts to cover the sort of 12 to 1500 boats that are going to be racing. So they obviously have to stagger them every 10 minutes.
And what would the highlights be? Because there are some amazing landscapes and indeed seascapes around there.
There are. It's a very beautiful course to race, actually. As I say, the starts and the finishes are in the Solent and start and finish house. And just an interesting point for listeners is that the Solent is actually the busiest stretch of water in the world. And they stop the traffic on water during the start process. So we have representatives from the Coast Guard and the Harbour Master, the ABP in Southampton, and they stop all the shipping movements because there are container after container after container ship coming through that stretch of water. But they actually stop all those traffic movements during our starting procedure, which is quite interesting. And it is, as I say, the busiest stretch of water in the world. And the majority of people are racing in amongst a massive fleet. So safety is paramount, but exquisite sights as you go round. And it's very simple. They cross the start line. They head in a westerly direction towards Yarmouth. And if you're sitting off at the Needles as a spectator, for example, up the top there, you watch this incredible spectacle of 1,500 or so boats beating down towards the Needles en masse. It is absolutely, there is no more beautiful sight on the water. The Needles Lighthouse, very famous. So they head off round the Needles and along the southwest coast of the island to the next observation point, which is St. Catherine's Point, and then up across Sandown Bay. And then, as I said earlier, the Bembridge Ledge Buoy, which is the only mark of the course. So they have to round that, which is quite entertaining when there's a lot of them. But it's fantastic spectator sport as well, because there are vantage points all around the island that you can actually watch this unfurling as they go round. And then they make their way back to No Man's Land Fort, which you can see from the Portsmouth shore. And then across Osborne Bay, Queen Victoria's old holiday pad, and which was very beautiful, beautiful bay. And then back to the finish line at Cowes.
What you said about it being a good spectator sport as well, because as a reporter, yes, trying to cover the race, I've driven across the island left, right and centre from one point to another to try and get from one vantage point to another. And it's hard work, yes, but it's quite good fun, especially if the weather's fantastic.
Some people do it on bicycles, you know, and they actually try and beat the race on bicycles to raise money for charity.
Now, you mentioned the many generations that are taking part, and Bob Fisher, who is a veteran sailor and sailing journalist, is taking part, and we're going to speak to him in a moment. Just a word about, before he can hear us, Peter, about just his experience of the race and what he brings to it.
He's such a fabulous character. I mean, he's very well known for those people who read the yachting magazines and the pundits for the America's Cup. He is the pundit supremo as far as the America's Cup is concerned.
Well, let's talk to him now from the America's Cup Media Centre in Bermuda. Bob, you've competed in the Round the Island race since the early 70s, I think.
Oh, yeah, somewhere about there. I can't remember the first one, but it's so long ago.
What makes it such an attractive event? Why do you keep going back?
Well, it's a race which you can't predict a great deal beforehand. Things change as you go round, and weather is like that, and also the tidal conditions and things like that. You've got to take everything into consideration on this race, and it tides, wind, and the blanketing effects of the island. Yeah, they're all in there. You've got to go and try everything, and you can use some of the experience you've got from previous ones. You should use the experience you've got from previous ones, which is why I should be keeping well clear of the wreck of the Varvassi.
Tell us that story.
Oh, no. Which one? I've hit it on more than one occasion, let's be honest. But, yeah, the sort of things. It took off one of the rudders of Barracuda or Tarrant.
And there is a real breadth of competitors out there, with the very experienced like yourself and the less experienced.
Oh, yeah, it's right across the board. You know, it's mum, dad and the kids out day out. The one thing you don't want to have in your crew is one of my great friends, Jim Saltonstall. Now, Jim came with us one or 2 years, and it's okay, he's a wonderful bloke to have on the boat, except that he will shout to the boats around and tell them where they're going wrong, and then you're just overtaking them and they shoot off.
Well, that's always been his job, hasn't it, coaching the British team?
Yeah, well, I wish he'd just coach us and not them, you know. But otherwise, yeah, you know, what
so,
a guy.
So what makes it a unique event?
Well, I think it's, you know, that the breadth of competitors is makes it look, you know, boats as small as 18, perhaps 20 feet, and right the way through up into 100 and odd feet long.
Okay, so for you, tell those who will be taking part for the first time, what for you are the highlights? What should they keep a lookout for?
Well, make sure you get your tides right. That's absolutely paramount. Get your tide tables out, go and have a look at the flow charts, see what happens at what point, and keep those in mind. Keep those in the cockpit, because those are the things that really, you know. Perhaps a copy of Peter Bruce's Solent Hazards and White Hazards. They would be useful, so they'd keep you out of trouble. Generally, keep your eyes open and have a look at what the other boats around you are doing, because some of them might be doing it right, some may be doing it wrong, but majority will be doing it right, and keep your eye on them.
Talk us through your day. Do you have any little traditions that you always like to do?
Well, there's one, of course, that we established with Jim, who came on board 1 year with a bag which he put down below, and he kept saying that from 7 o'clock onwards, you know, 5 hours to totty time, and at 8 o'clock it was 4 hours to totty time. I mean, the hell he was talking about, except that about 10 to 12 he went down below, opened his bag, took out a bottle of overproof navy rum, put 8 glasses, because we were 8 crew on board, across the bridge deck, and poured the bottle evenly among those, handed one to everybody on board, and said, wait. Looked at his watch, and at precisely 12 o'clock he blew his bosun's whistle, piped up spirits, gentlemen, the Queen, and threw his down, and everybody on board went like that. And even our 14-year-old crewman at the time went zonk, and it went down, and went, and I promise, his eyes did come out like all wind stops. But next year he was back and he said, we are in Totty time, aren't we? So, yeah, there are things that go on around the island.
And I suspect there are plenty of people who won't wait till midday to open the run.
Well, I don't know about them, but we won't be this year.
What are the things to look out for? You've mentioned the wreck, but any other dangers to be aware of?
Well, there are all the dangers down the shoreline down to down to St Catharines is littered with all sorts of rubbish and things. Keep away. Well, you know, look where you're going. Check it on the charts. Check it with the books from those who know what's down there, and make it patently clear. And if you think you're going to benefit from going further out and getting a better tide than going in, you've got to make up your mind. My own entry this year is an 1898 Fife day boat.
Tell me more about it.
Well, it's a boat that was built by William Fife in 1898 as a 1/5 scale test model for Shamrock 1. He didn't believe in these small models you put in testing tanks.
This was the America's Cup Shamrock.
And he didn't believe in these. His mate down the road did and used the tank at Dumbarton, which is still in use today, for Glasgow University students.
But and Shamrock was 1899,
first Shamrock. And so this was built a year beforehand to test the lines. And so it's 18 feet on the waterline as opposed to the 90 feet that the, because it's 1/5 scale. Because we want to have a crack at the Gold Roman Bowl. The boat has proved itself in the past. It went to the Fife Regatta in 2013. And I was on board for the first two races and left the boys with the cry, look, I've given you two bullets, don't let me down. And they didn't. I got a communication from them when I was in San Francisco. We have to discard a bullet from our scoreline. We reckon it's going to be one of yours. Sorry. So, you know, and funnily enough, we've got the crew. The number one crew is on board for going around the island.
So hopes are high.
Hopes are high, yeah. Well, of course they are. If you don't go in hoping, you're never going to come out with anything.
Absolutely right. Well, Bob will join me in the pre-race press conference on the 31st of July, so I look forward to plenty more of his anecdotes. And by the way, Dame Ellen MacArthur and the TV presenter Ben Fogle will be with us too, so make sure you get across that on all the various race platforms, which we'll tell you about in a moment. But Peter, there's a really broad range of people taking part, isn't there?
We've got young, old, I mean, just fantastic. We've got young racers from Parkston Yacht Club on their J24. We've got twin sisters who are 420 champions and part of the British Sailing Youth Team. And they're racing all out of their comfort zone because they're not racing 420s around the island. You can't do that. But they are racing. I think it's a J70. So people are challenging themselves. Even the sort of the amateur stroke professional sailors are challenging themselves in the Round the Island race. And that's what makes it so exciting for everybody to watch. But entries come from Belgium, Channel Islands, further afield. It's reported on right round the world. I think the furthest flung entry we've had is probably Australia.
Well, I tell you what, let's not go quite as far as Australia now, but let's cross to the Middle East and speak to Paul Marks, who will be competing with, I think it's five other members of the Dubai Offshore Sailing Club, which sounds very exotic to us. And I have seen some fantastic photos on your website, which we're going to try and put onto our Facebook page as well, so you can check those out. But I have to ask, why come all the way over to the very pretty, but admittedly not particularly exotic, Isle of Wight?
I don't know. It's all relative, isn't it? So, I mean, obviously you're used to the lovely scenery and the great sailing over there. And, you know, we live, I suppose, in the Manhattan of the Middle East. But you're quite right. I mean, those shots are quite spectacular, but they do tend to be the same view that we see day in and day out. So for us, we think the Isle of Wight and the Solent is extremely exotic.
Well, it's a hassle, though, isn't it? You've got to come all the way over. You've got to charter a yacht. Why are you doing it?
I think, to be perfectly honest, one or two of us, we're all English. We sort of know the Solent. We've grown up there. I personally have been here for about 23 years, and I sailed it last year. And as you know, conditions last year were spectacular. And I was on a high for about, you know, a month when I came back, and I was chatting to some friends about it. And when it came up this year, a couple of the guys had already started thinking about it. And of course, yes, you're quite right. The first question was, well, we need a boat. So James Angus, who's going to be skippering, took it upon himself to have a look at where we could charter a boat. And we're very excited to be sailing a quite new 42 Bavaria S, which is quite exotic for us as well. So the logistics sort of start really with a boat, which sort of went quite well. And then a few weeks later, we all sat around a table with a few beers and said, OK, guys, well, what about other bits? What kind of other bits? Well, where are we berthing and how are we getting there and where are we meeting? The boat's in Hamble, is it? So we've got to sail it across from Hamble. And so, you're quite right. There's quite a lot to do. But I guess that's most of the fun.
Yes, absolutely. And you mentioned James, the skipper. Who else is on the crew? How many in total?
Well, there's six of us. Five of us reside here. And we see each other regularly racing in our own Commodore's Cup and regular Tuesday night racings. And Aaron, who we haven't met yet, is based in the UK.
Let's talk about your experiences around the island, because there'll be people listening who haven't signed up yet and are wondering whether to do it. What was your highlight? What's the best part of it? And what's your tip for avoiding the worst part of it?
I mean, we were very lucky. The reason I sailed it last year is that 3 years ago I sailed in the Dubai Muscat race, and one of the crew members was a great friend of the owner, Stephen Hartigan, and he has sailed the round the island a couple of times, and he very kindly, in a reciprocal gesture, invited us aboard last year. And we thought, oh, that will be nice. And we looked at the website and we thought, oh, a couple of years ago, they had naught knots. That looks nice and tame, and all the lovely photographs of spinnakers. And we should have guessed as we sailed the boat across from Portsmouth in 20 knots that there we were coming from these fairly benign conditions. I mean, the average is about, you know, maybe 10 to 15 knots here. To a start line with 1,000 boats. And I think we were about 30 knots of wind at the beginning. Our objective, obviously, like any sailor, is to get around safely and to enjoy it, and also revel in the absolute spectacle. I mean, it is one of the prettiest and most delightful sights that you'll ever see on the water. And the other thing was the great camaraderie, people from all over the UK and around the world. In fact, we actually bumped into another couple of DOSC members while we were there. And there can't be a more spectacular event. And for somebody as a first timer, to have experienced those conditions last year. And we did okay. We finished 388th out of the, I think it was 1,533 boats last year. So not too shabby.
Well, congratulations on that. We'll see how you do this year. What was the worst part of it? what's your tip?
Oh, that downwind leg with, I have a photograph on my Facebook page of a 10-foot wave behind me. And, you know, it was fairly hairy. Obviously, you know, we were all reefed. There weren't that many spinnakers around. I mean, I have to admit, it was pretty scary. We were a pretty experienced crew, and although we don't experience those conditions, we handled them pretty well. But there were quite a few people who you could see were probably out for the first time of the year, lots of boats broaching in front of you. And the other intriguing part was, of course, listening to the safety services on the radio, how superb they are and how calm. There were quite a few mast breakages, men overboards, and I think we had that unfortunate sinking. But just, you know, it was the fastest 9 hours of my life. I think we thoroughly enjoyed it.
Sounds fantastic. So many stories came out of that one race, and I'm sure that it'll be the same again this year. Yeah. Just before we let you go, tell us about DOSC, as you call it, the Dubai Offshore Sailing Club.
The club actually started in 1974. So what are we talking about? What, 43 years? Obviously, the Dubai has a wonderful maritime history, and back in 74, you know, we had some expats who thought it would be a nice idea to put a club together. And in those days, of course, there was quite a lot of space available, but you can't just knock up a club. You need to acquire land, and we were very lucky back in 74 that the son of the then ruler, His Highness Sheikh Ahmed bin Rashid Al Maktoum,
I can tell
granted
you, I can
a piece
tell
of
you've
land.
Been there 20 odd years because those names just rattle off the tongue, don't they now?
we hear them a lot, but you know, they have been great benefactors and you know, take a lot of credit for what's happened in this city. I mean, as you probably know, it's a worldwide destination now, and so the club grew up. Grew quite quickly, but off the back of land that was granted to us. The interesting thing is that it has grown. It really is a really nice club now, 750 members and all keen sailors. But it is still a non-for-profit club. The revenues generated through membership and social activities, sailing lessons, are all ploughed back into the club. And one of the real missions, I guess, or the vision of the club is to be the premier establishment for sailing here. But the real mission is to work in partnership with Dubai's government agencies in trying to attract world-class sailing events and encourage the development of Emirati sailing. But having said that, there's been an element of success with past DOSC members who, you know, in the past have represented at sort of World Hobie Cat level and European level. In 1991, we had our first ROC event, which was the Dubai Muscat Race, which is a 340 nautical mile annual event over 3 days. 1998 saw us established as an RYA recognized training establishment. And in a couple of years ago, we set up the DOSC Academy, which takes young sailors from sort of learning to sail to elite coaching. Being part of the community is important for the credibility and longevity of the club, because with gifted land, if somebody wants to, they can plonk a lovely 4-star hotel on our site. But we have developed it to a great infrastructure, a lovely club next to the fishing village. Sailability is a very important part of sailing for less able people. So it really is a community club as well.
Paul, well, have a really great round the island race. I think 388 then is your target, given that's where you came last year.
Yeah, no pressure on this year's crew.
No pressure at all. Enjoy that safe trip over. And should any of us find ourselves in Dubai, we'll pop over to the Dubai Offshore Sailing Club.
It would be a delight to have you. And on a serious note, you know, we hope to be exchanging burgees with the Island Sailing Club on the Friday and Saturday night. And the club does welcome overseas visitors. And if you're on holiday or just passing through, please drop in.
Great stuff. Well, Peter Stewart Hunt still with us. And Peter, you must be feeling very satisfied at hearing that interview from Dubai, because I know your team have put a lot of effort into getting international coverage.
Well, with the tracking, that helps enormously, because that brings people on board. But our website homepage, it turns into just a communication platform for race day. And everybody can follow, friends, families and sailing fans around the world can follow the tracking. We have RTI TV, as in Round the Island Race TV, which we launched in 2015. And that's a 4.5-hour live program covering all the starts. And it also covers the first finishers, all the key finishers. Also during this period, social media has become a very popular communication platform, particularly amongst the younger generation. And that gives us a very quick and easy way to increase communication throughout the race community. But we have countries, I think there's something like 80 countries now following the Round the Island race on race day, which is really exciting.
For those who've never been, tell us, what is the atmosphere like on the Isle of Wight, and especially in Cowes?
Oh, it's amazing. The marinas are all absolutely full. I mean, we do get people coming over first thing, I mean, really first thing, at Sparrows. From Hamble and from Poole and from Lymington and from Portsmouth. And they come in either on the Friday or they sail over really early in the morning on Saturday, because the marinas are full already. And the people have booked their berth a year beforehand to make sure they're in Cowes and they don't have to get up quite so early. And you can smell the bacon butties from a long way off, and the hot coffee's there and people are excited. The place is awash with a buzz and an atmosphere that I've never seen anywhere else. And then the colour is magnificent. People are excited, enthusiastic. energized, and it's just a great thing to see, and you can't help but spend the whole day smiling.
I think there must be a lot of listeners in America or in Australia smiling because you've been talking about bacon butties at Sparrow's Fart. And if ever you wanted to know how British the Round the Island race was, I think that kind of sums it up, really. All right, so if you're listening to this before June the 17th, you can still take part. How do they do that?
They basically go to our website. That's the best thing to do. And there is an entry form on the website. And as long as you enter before 23:59, that is 24-hour clock, 23:59 on June the 17th, you will get in as a standard entry.
And what does it cost?
Oh, a mere £117.
As a crew member, is it easy to get a slot on a boat somewhere?
Well, the best thing to do at this point is to go on again onto the race website, which is roundtheisland.org.uk, and go to the forum where we've got a crew search. So there's a crew register there for either people who are looking for crew or people wanting to be crew, and hopefully the two align happily on the day. But it's worth the effort. It will be a fabulous day out for anyone, whether you're brand new to it or you've been doing it for years and years and years.
I think that sums it all up. Peter Stuart Hunt, thank you very much. Have a wonderful time. I'll see you down there.
Thank you very much, Alec.
And that is Sailing Uncovered. Thanks for listening and downloading. Remember our Facebook page, where you'll find a daily 60-second race report from the America's Cup in Bermuda. So if you don't get to watch it on TV or you miss it, that's the place to go. And we'll be back in a few days' time with an America's Cup special, which isn't going to spend half an hour analysing the racing or going into all the backroom politics. What the aim of it will be is to basically celebrate the America's Cup and the people who make it. I've met lots of amazing people here, Bermudians, people from all around the world, and they've got some great stories which I'll bring you, as well as looking at some of the technical side of the boats and why it is such a revolutionary edition of the America's Cup. So that's coming out soon. Remember to subscribe, and that way it'll download automatically onto your listening device. But that's it for now from me. Thanks for listening, and bye-bye.